Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Memphis Hardwood. We are late in a season that just doesn't matter that much anymore. So a big part of what we're going to talk about today is what does still matter? Where have we been? What are we keeping an eye on as we enter into these last 7 or 8 games of the season? I'm looking here and we have 6 games left. Marvin Stockwell, jump on in the mix here, my friend. How you holding up?
I'm holding up great. I mean, life is fantastic right now on the personal side. I think as Grizzlies fans, we'd all like to be somewhere else. Like we'd all like to be thinking about the playoffs, you know,
but
I think we've all kind of polished into a nice polished stone. It's like, oh, Gigi and Vince, boy. If that's the silver lining to this season that we wouldn't have wished for this, but if there's a silver lining, it's Vince and Gigi. Yeah. I think the other really positive thing to note of late is that Brandon Clark is back. In fact, he's more back than a lot of players coming back. Like he had a severe injury.
And
I feel like he kind of almost hasn't lost a step. He looks really good.
Definitely not.
So that bodes really well.
To me, Brandon Clark looks exactly the same as Brandon Clark looked before he blew out his Achilles, which is an
incredible,
unbelievable feat, right, to accomplish in just over a year, essentially. It typically takes a couple of years for players to really get back to where they were. But, you know, Brandon Clark and Chris Harrington and Drew Hill were talking about that this week on their podcast. I mean, Brandon Clark is basically a player who is going to go out and give you 20 minutes, and in those 20 minutes, he's going to be highly efficient, right? So for his career, he has shot 60% from the field. He has gotten 11 points and 6 rebounds and 1.4 assists. That's for his career. In the 4 games that he's been back with the Memphis Grizzlies, Marv, he is averaging 6 rebounds, 1.8 assists, and 12 points. It's essentially identical. Literally, his field goal percentage, 60.5% this year, 60.4% over his career. So he's literally doing the exact same thing. His effective field goal percentage for the 4 games he played in this career is exactly the same, 61.8%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's doing exactly what we expect of Brandon Clark, and he's already doing it. There's a number of things that have been great. I did watch both of the games that we won this week, and they were fantastic, well played games. Jaren Jackson Jr. was the best player on the court in both of the games, by far, and basically was unstoppable. And I do mean that, including Giannis Antetokounmpo. Jaren Jackson Jr. was the better player in that game. He may not be the better player overall, but watching Brandon Clark right in these last couple of games, it is so obvious that he affects winning in very direct ways. And what I mean by that is he puts himself in a position where he's going to put pressure on the defense as a role guy going right to the middle of the lane. And that sucks the defense in, which creates more space on the perimeter. And so guys can either put up a shot and maybe have a decent chance of hitting it, or they could put the ball on the floor, or they can cut into the middle. So just that little bit of space that you have now that Brandon Clark creates by being able to get into the lane, rise up, hit a shot. I mean, he's very reliable with that floater, has already opened up the team in such profound ways. And just to pull the frame back, part of the thing that I felt even before Ja got hurt, right? So when he was still suspended, and we talked about how certain players can have an exponential impact on the team, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about Steven Adams at that time and his ability to set screens, his ability to get offensive rebounds, and then the add-on benefits that gets, right? Get an offensive rebound from Steven Adams, he kicks it out, you've now got an open three because the defense sucked in to try to get that rebound, right? So he makes other guys better in that way. Brandon Clark may have the most exponential impact of all the players. As I was watching him, I was sitting here thinking, I think his impact on winning is higher than Steven Adams. For a variety of different reasons. And so I just share that in the malaise, the sort of deep malaise at the tail end of this season, by way of saying there's obviously some good stuff to watch, which is Brandon Clark's impact on winning. But I know everybody says this when their team sucks, but the Grizzlies are going to be a handful next year, Marv.
100%.
They're going to be a problem. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to play FIBA ball. I'm pretty sure he's going to the Olympics, man. I mean, I think he's going to be on the Olympic team. And we're going to do Memphis Hardwood, you know, hopefully as much as we can this summer, and talk about Jaren playing on the world stage, just as we did, you know, last summer. And Jaren has already become a significantly better player this year as a result of having the ball in his hands a lot and doing some other things. Like his offensive game, I mean, you know, peak form. Desmond Bain could be on the NBA USA, excuse me, the USA team. So you may have two guys from the Grizzlies playing USA basketball this summer. So what does that mean? That means they're going to come back. That's why Jaren is so dominant right now, because he's been in basketball form for months. And so he's starting to peak at the right moment if we were going to the playoffs. Of course, we're not, right? Yeah. And on top of that, you got Ja Morant and Brandon Clark. And now we've got Vince Williams Jr. and G.G. Jackson. Throw Santi Aldama in there and Luke Kennard, bro. You have a great basketball team. So Brandon Clark's recent arrival, man, has got me fired up about all that, about the Grizzlies.
It bodes well. And I just, like, before we knew about Brandon Clark, it's kind of like, oh, still lots going well for us. But it's just like that was hanging out there. You know, it was like it was a question mark. And now it's been answered.
Yeah. Well, especially with salary, because you're like, okay, like if Brandon Clark comes back and he's not very good, he just signed a multi-year deal. And so then that becomes an albatross for your team. Then you got to figure out how to get rid of that contract. So not only do you not have that player, but now you've got an issue. How do we get this guy off? Meaning you're probably not going to be able to get very good players to come in for that, right? Because you're just trying to get rid of dead contract. All that is gone. So now you're just thinking, wow, Brandon Clark contributing to winning, just like you did before he got hurt. So
worth as the you money. Say it,
oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a huge relief on a lot of different fronts. Mm-hmm. So, and then I didn't even mention Marcus Smart in that group of players. So the Grizzlies, you know, have a pretty solid group of 10 players who are prepared to help this team win at the highest levels. I will say, Marv, last night I watched a little bit of the Sacramento Kings and New York Knicks game. It's because it was the primetime game on TNT. And we have HBO Max, and now you can watch those games on HBO Max. You can watch TNT games if you have an HBO Max subscription. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, news alert to those out there. So I put the game on, and bro, I was like, the game, the level of skill from players on both those teams, those are going to both be like highly, you know, decently seeded playoff teams. And I've been watching the Grizzlies play, especially this week, like against the Detroit Pistons, who are so bad. And it's like just two, it's like a rock fight, like two teams. It's like an AAU game or something. So I watched this, like I watched these two like bona fide playoff level NBA teams. I was like, damn, it just made me think, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It just made me think about how much Jake LaRavia sucks. Sorry. I'm like, Jake LaRavia, I mean, I want him to be good, but there's this combination of factors. When he gets the ball, he's just too slow. His foot speed is too slow. He gets the ball, and it takes him so long to decide what to do. So it's both, I guess it's both his processing speed and his foot speed. He cannot break anybody down off the dribble. That's why he's always falling down, because he essentially runs as hard as he can into the lane and tries to use his size to get contact at the rim. And a lot of times he just gets knocked down, doesn't even get a foul. So, and I'm not really trying to hate on Jake too much, because I mean, he's had some good run here over the last month. He's had some decent games, but it just reminds me, it's like, bro, Jake LaRavia cannot be part of your rotation. He cannot.
Yeah.
But he's firmly ensconced in the rotation right now, just because we don't have anybody else. So,
right.
It will be great when we can get back to having 8 to 10 NBA quality rotation players playing for the Memphis Grizzlies. Because, Mark, this time of year for the last 3 years, we've been gearing up to go to the playoffs.
That's right.
And dude, I mean, I was in Rochester where I live now last year when the Grizzlies were playing the Lakers and we did Memphis Hardwood. And I remember we were just so disappointed, you know, and it was just a tough way to end the year. Yeah. And man, it didn't get any better this year. So
no, it didn't.
It's been pretty much a solid year of Grizzlies misery for us.
Yeah, with little moments of joy sprinkled in there.
Yeah, us, just the
us hardy, this I, the us hardy few. We're like, oh, yeah. That's just enough to sustain me,
right? But not really. I was thinking, like, so when Ja came back, we won 4 games in a row. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
it was in December. It was right before Christmas. We won 4 games in a row. Everybody's like, oh yeah, Grizzlies. Like, we can't remember what we were at that time. It was like, mm-hmm. What was the record? Let me see. I can go back and see here. Oh yeah, so we won 4 games in a row starting December 19th. That was Ja's return. We beat the Pelicans, then we beat Indiana, and then we beat Atlanta, and then we narrowly escaped victory again against the Pelicans, 116-115. That was when Ja made that like game winner. The day after Christmas, right? And then basically, like, it was announced Ja's like going to be hurt or whatever. So at that time, the Grizzlies' record was 10-19, and you're like, okay, we're going to make the climb, we're going to get back up there. And then obviously that didn't work out. So on December 26th, we had won 10 games. Now it's April 5th, and we've won exactly 16 games since that time. So it's just like when you talk about the little moments of joy, like, oh, that was a great time, like right around Christmas. Like, oh, Ja's back, perfect Christmas gift. We're winning games. And like, we won basically 25% of all of our games in that like 5-day window. <It's> like, so man, the moments of joy have been few and far between in this season.
I just think it's been the emergence of these players, like those have been the kind of like unknown. Yeah, it's silver lining, right? It's just like, and just, you know, the Gigi making it, oh my God, I'm talking to Shaq face. I mean, that's one of the kind of precious moments of the season, you know, like it's that stuff, but it's like, it's, you know, what do they call it? Cold consolation, you know, or whatever, to what we'd like to be doing is eat, which is eating a steady diet of playoff wins, right?
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to mention, speaking of steady diet of playoff wins, I did watch the Marc Gasol Made in Memphis documentary. I put together 1,500 words on that. And it's just something, you know, you have something in you and you want to write it. And so I had to get it out. It's a very moving documentary. And I'll just hit a number of the highlights for me.
Yeah.
Number one, Marc Gasol is a Project Pat fan. Didn't know that. So you start watching this documentary, and like the cover of the documentary is like one of the Project Pat albums. It's like framed that way because he's such a Project Pat fan. Marv, it turns out, you know, he was here in Memphis because his whole family moved here when Powell got drafted by the Grizzlies.
Sure.
He's going to Lausanne, and everybody's like, oh yeah, he plays in Lausanne. He's kind of a chunky kid, but like, you know, whatever. And then he goes back to Spain, becomes this great player, then comes to the Grizzlies.
Right.
What I didn't know, and I mean, I feel like I was following as closely as anybody, Mark was in the streets of Memphis. He had two of his best friends from Lausanne lived in Fraser. So he was going to Fraser and playing pickup games like every day of the week.
Wow.
And so they would blast Project Pat, and like he would hang out in Fraser. And we're the same age, Marc Gasol and I. Uh-huh. And so we're talking, you know, when he's what, 16 years old. So that's like 2000, 99, 2000. And bro, Memphis was rough. During that time period, Fraser was not a great neighborhood, and there's been a lot of good stuff they've been doing in subsequent years.
Sure.
But it just made me understand, like, Marc Gasol actually is a real Memphian.
Like, that's right.
He wasn't just a Powell's brother, like, or going to Lausanne. Cause like Fraser is a long way from the leafy enclaves of Lausanne. Right. So
indeed.
I was just like, damn, okay, he has this real connection to Memphis. And so that was really cool for me to learn a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Dude, the other thing, the Grizzlies went to the playoffs 7 years in a row while he was here. And I haven't done the math to like look it up, but I think during that time period, like, I don't even think the Spurs went to the playoffs every year during that time period. I think the Grizzlies ended up having the longest consecutive streak of playoff appearances. That is so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Exhibit A, the Grizzlies are not going to the playoffs this season.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have a great team? Absolutely. Do I think the ceiling of this crew is higher than the ceiling of the core four?
Yep.
Absolutely. But it still shows you how fucking hard it is, pardon my French, to go to the playoffs every year for 7 years in a row. That is really, really hard. And that Grizzlies team, remember, Zebo hurt his knee 1 year. Remember, I remember we were playing the Bulls. And so he went out for a while. Marc Gasol broke the bone in his foot. Mike Conley, had numerous bumps and bruises. Tony Allen was always dealing, it seemed like, with a hamstring issue. So they had all the stuff that, but they still made it to the playoffs. And so I just, so what do you do with that, right? I mean, I think what I did with it, and I sort of wrote about this, is that team, the core four grit and grind team, they knew how hard it was to win at the highest levels. This team, the current Grizzlies team, they do not know that yet. They don't have those lessons. And what Marc Gasol talked about consistently is, hey, if you don't play the right way, remember how often he talked about you got to play the right way while he was here? And he would get mad even if they won and they didn't play the right way. One of the things he said was, if you don't play the right way, so you have blown defensive coverage, you get caught in rotation, or you don't execute a fast break properly, whatever those little things are in the game. If you get to the highest levels of competition, you're not going to win, because those habits that you establish in the regular season, those are going to be the habits you fall back on. And he said, I knew when we went to the playoffs, I could trust Zebo to be in the right spot. You could trust Marc Gasol is going to call out the coverages. You could trust Mike Conley to make the right pass at the right time. You could trust Tony Allen most of the time, right, to do the things that he needed to do. And Mark, I just don't think that this current group of players is there yet. I don't think
Yeah,
we're
they don't have
there.
the cohesion. That's right.
And so I think that's another reason why, even amidst, I mean, this has been a really tough, but remember, the Grizzlies, Mark, made the playoffs that year that they had 28 players on the roster. They still made the playoffs that
I
year.
know.
And so to me, that's worth reflecting on, because this Grizzlies team had 3 years in a row. The streak is over. So there's a good chance this current version of the Grizzlies, even if they're, quote, better, will not have the same sustained playoff success that the core four did. So why does that matter? It matters because, dude, that was special. What happened in Memphis between 2011 and 2018 was special. And Kevin Durant, in the documentary, he calls the Memphis core four grit and grind, he calls it a dynasty.
Oh,
And
that's awesome.
they were like, KD, and they were like, yeah. He's like, I know they didn't win a championship, but they were a dynasty because they were so consistently good and because they had such consistent success in the playoffs. So he's like, to me, hey, you look at the dynasty, the Lakers, the Celtics, Golden State most recently, and they're winning championships. He called the Grizzlies core four a dynasty. And I just thought that is high praise from one of the most talented guys to ever
Well, for sure.
lace up sneakers,
Oh,
So,
that's
man,
so cool.
it was cool. It just made me reflect a little bit on, why that was such a really amazing stretch of basketball, Marv, because
For
it really
fans,
was.
yeah, it just like, and it mapped over to a broader in my mind anyway, a broader like Memphis Renaissance. All sorts of other things were popping off and going well in the city, and it just seemed to be energetically, it made perfect sense that we would do well in basketball because it fit in with the overarching success of Memphis in a lot of other realms. And I could be seeing that a little bit through rose-colored glasses. I'll be the first to admit I'm a glass overflowing optimist, at least for me, for having lived through that portion of Memphis history, it just like it was such a joy because we'd never had it before. We'd never had that type of, we'd never had an NBA team, but we didn't know what success was, right? Like,
We never even won a playoff game in the NBA until Zach
until
Randolph, Marc
that.
Gasol, Tony Allen. Yep.
No, I remember where I was standing. I was out in my driveway shooting basketball, and I looked at
Yeah.
my phone and realized that we'd, quote, stolen game one against the Spurs. Now,
Yeah.
And then flash forward whatever it was that 10 days, and I was sitting up in the cheap, air quotes, cheap seats, because they weren't cheap because all the seats were expensive, but I was sitting all the I literally was in the top row, 50-yard line, watching game six, and it's like I was part of that electric crowd. That's one of the most incredible experiences of my lifetime. But
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean it's amazing because that was the first Grizzlies playoff series victory, right? So I mean it's so that's really special, and to be there to sort of witness that, and so this group of the Grizzlies, they've only won one playoff series against Minnesota, and coming back to Brandon Clark, he's the reason we won that, right? I mean he made the difference in that Minnesota series. So this current Grizzlies team has a lot of work to do. Now, what's the good news? I mean, the good news is Jaren Jackson Jr. is 24 years old. You know, like, what's the good news, right? Like, the good news is Ja Morant is 24 years old. You know what I mean? Like, Desmond Bane is 25 years old. So we've already achieved more sooner in the careers of those guys than the core four did, right? We've already won a playoff series, right? And these guys are in their mid-20s. So to me, like that's sort of one of the last big takeaways is it's like, wow, the best is yet to come because this group of players is more talented. Marc Gasol, this was really interesting. I wrote about this in the article. Marc Gasol and Tony Allen were talking about how now the default defensive coverage is a drop coverage. So in a pick and roll situation, the big will slide back towards the rim and step into the paint. And part of the reason that you do that, right, is so that the guard can prevent them from shooting a three, right? And you can drop back, and then if they come into the paint, you protect the paint. And Tony Allen and Marc Gasol were talking about how it was very common for Marc Gasol to essentially trap with Tony Allen, the ball handler. And so Mark wouldn't drop back, and they would trap the ball handler, trying to force a turnover and create that chaos, right? Get guys in the mud. They were talking about that exact defensive schema, and he's like, I don't think we could play that way anymore. He said perimeter players are faster, they're more skilled, and the way the rules have changed is it gives deference to the offensive player. So he's like, we couldn't even play that defensive coverage anymore. And so they were both reflecting on how much the game has changed even since that time. So in that context, our guys are fast. They can shoot, right? We have defensive prowess, both in Jaren Jackson Jr. and Marcus Smart, now Vince Williams Jr. So you have all the pieces, you know, that you need. And it'll just be really interesting, Marv, to see what happens when the full team hits the court next year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the future is
But
bright
we can,
for the Grizzlies.
the future's bright, but yeah, I think that core four team was just such a thing to cherish because it was A, it was unexpected, and B, you know, a team constructed like we have now with a really smart, judicious front office that we have confidence in, you know, versus, you know, I think in
Chris
hindsight we
Wallace.
could Yeah, in hindsight, we can kind of view them as like even probably more chaotic than we even realized at the time. And at the time, we realized that it was kind of like, well, hoping for the best, you know, like
Yeah,
so
oh,
like
for sure.
at best, the old paradigm of putting together a team was viewed as some kind of crazy alchemy that just happened to work. You know,
Right.
like the whole like
Yeah.
getting Zebo. Oh man, this guy's a problem. You know,
Yeah.
all the track record. But
Oh,
so
yeah.
the thing that was part about the whole thing being satisfying was the fact that it did feel like, and probably was to a degree, a
Yeah.
group of cobbled together players that,
Yeah.
by God, found a way to put it together. You
Oh,
know,
my God,
it was
dude.
so
So,
satisfying.
I mean, going back through, well, first of all, let me back up and say, Michael, or excuse me, Chris Wallace is interviewed in the documentary, and he's like, the single biggest mistake I ever made was drafting Hasheem Thabeet. Now, what's interesting about that is Marc Gasol, he's like, when they drafted Hasheem Thabeet, I was like, oh, okay, it's on. So you think that you're going to bring this guy in and he's going to take my position. Okay. All right. And then so he just busted his ass in training camp. People talked about it because they went down to Birmingham for training camp that year. And Marc Gasol absolutely just made infantilized Hasheem Thabeet, right? And like never even gave him a chance to take his position. But you go back on that and it's like, okay, like Chris Wallace drafted Kyle Lowry and Mike Conley. Okay. He hit on those guys. Dante Green, nope. Kevin Love traded him to Minnesota. Sam Young, decent player, not great. Damari Carroll, decent player. Didn't end up staying with the Grizzlies that long. Hasheem Thabeet, no. Grievous Vasquez, decent player, didn't stay with the Grizzlies that long. Dominique Jones, no. Xavier Henry, no. Josh Selby, no. Tony Roten, no. I mean, you could just keep going on the list, bro. There was no confidence from the Grizzlies fan base, I don't think, that they would ever do anything good in the draft. And now, right, you get to where we are now with Zach Kleiman and company, and you go back and look, right, since Jaren Jackson Jr., right? Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, Vince Williams, and we also got in Brandon Clark, Desmond Bane, right, via trades. So like they've hit on a lot of guys now. So
Totally.
that just gives you a lot of confidence moving forward. So anyway, I highly recommend the Gasol documentary to everybody. It's not only just about the Grizzlies past, it also gives you some insight today into what we could expect from this team, right? It kind of shapes your expectations of the current Grizzlies team.
Right, totally. Yeah.
Well, the Grizzlies will be in action tonight. It is not for the faint of heart. So I strongly suggest that if you want to watch the Grizzlies, that if you libate, maybe you should consider libating. They will be playing against the Detroit Pistons. So they probably, hopefully, will have a good performance this year. And then, of course, tomorrow night is the jersey retirement ceremony for none other than Marcus All. So definitely tune
Wow.
into that. Joel Embiid will be in
Yeah.
town. 76ers will be playing in Memphis. So get down to FedEx Forum. I'm not sure if it's sold out, but I think there's still tickets available. So check in on the
Probably
Grizzlies.
so.
Marv, maybe you and Cormac can get down there.
Maybe we should. We've got tickets to that game against the Spurs. It's the St. Patrick's Church night at the Grizzlies. So we're like,
Yeah.
let's pile in and go see rookie Wemby.
Yeah,
Let's go see it. Yeah, it should be
that'll be
fun.
fun. All right, y'all. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Mr. Stockwell, for being on the show. Appreciate
Absolutely.
it as always.
Always a pleasure. Go Grizzlies.
Go Grizzlies. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Hope everybody's taking care of yourselves. It'll be a fun playoff run this year for somebody. I'm personally pulling for Mike Conley and the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll talk more about that next time we're back here on Memphis Hardwood. Take care. See you next time.